Hey guys, and welcome to the Family Business Indaba podcast.
We are the voice of African family business, promoting generational wealth and generational legacies.
And my name is Susan Tendi.
And I am Nikia Amani.
And we're going to be taking you through the journey of African family business. Hi, Steve. Welcome once again.
Cici.
Welcome once again to FB21.
Good to be back. I was with you on Sunday from my home in the suburbs. Now I'm at my office in downtown Montreal, Canada.
Oh, you're lucky. I'm working out of home and I'm going to be stuck here for the next 2 weeks because our lockdown is still pretty much carrying on. How is it?
Well, I kind of sneak into the office. I really am supposed to be home because this isn't exactly an essential service. But I get out and I come here and I'm all by myself. So I'm still social distancing. I'm just giving my family a break from me and not sharing the bandwidth with three other people.
Yeah. And the bandwidth is really, really pushing it right now. Globally, everybody's online in some form or on some device.
It's crazy how this, you know, a lot of like Zoom sends out notices that says, you know, you might not be on high definition because we're trying to ration the bandwidth everywhere. And who saw this coming? I know I didn't, but.
You know, it's funny how sometimes you realize that we are prepared for certain things without even knowing it. When the internet came, everyone was so skeptical of it for the longest time. And now all of a sudden, it's something that we use every day and it's part of our existence. I can't imagine life without the internet.
Well, yeah, we use it without thinking of it. And God forbid something should happen and your internet goes down, your world stops.
Yeah, we had a similar situation sometime in 2018. We found ourselves with an internet blackout and it was interesting. It was very interesting. So to get on to our topic, governance during this time, I was reading your article on your blog about how governance for family businesses during this time has become quite an interesting sport.
Yes. Well, so if you're talking about the most recent blog, it came about as a result of a webinar that I was on here in Canada a couple of weeks ago, where Jim Grubman, who has written a book with Dennis Jaffe, who I know you're going to have Dennis Jaffe on in a few days. But Jim Grubman had mentioned that this crisis and what it is turning into for many families, it has turned into a test of their family governance. Mm-hmm. And when I say a test, it's when big things happen with big changes, you know, we sort of look at what's important and we sort of concentrate and look inward to see how it affects us. And his point was that a lot of families are going through some introspective, intra-family decisions when big decisions have to be made by a family business, where they got to decide, are we shutting down? Are we laying off these people? Everyone sort of needs to come together and you know, figure those things out. Now, a family that has already gone down the road and defined how they will make decisions will be better placed to pass that proverbial test than a family that hasn't really figured those things out and maybe in a transition from one generation to another. Let's say the father has handed things down to his daughter and she's been mostly running things. All of a sudden, there's a crisis. Maybe dad shows up again and says, okay, no, I'm back at the helm. And that can cause problems. So the extent to which a family has already sort of figured out how they're going to make decisions together, how they're going to communicate, how they're going to solve problems together, which are the three components that I usually talk about when I talk family governance. Decision-making, communications, problem solving. Mm-hmm. If you have those things already figured out, which you've been doing over weeks and months and years to the point where everyone understands them and accepts them, then a crisis or anything else that happens will be easier to get through than for a family where they haven't done that work and haven't progressed to a point where the decisions that come out of a crisis are more or less, there's a formula on how to handle them and who does what and what the values are that are underneath those structures and decision-making formats.
So all of a sudden we found ourselves in this situation where I think nobody was expecting this. We had gotten forewarnings, and from now when people pull out records on YouTube and so forth and news channels, we realized that there was chatter about it over many decades, but we never saw ourselves in this situation. And with most families, especially looking at when it comes to governance, a lot of families are waking up to family governance. They've got natural governance procedures in place where there's unwritten rules, unformalized rules. But how do they really then come to a space like this and handle themselves, thinking of the three spaces that you spoke about, which is making decisions together, communicating, and solving problems? Because they've all of a sudden found themselves in a situation where if they didn't communicate well and they didn't have structures where they formalize how they communicate with each other, they now have to solve major problems that are not just being faced by themselves as a business, but by the business community around them and the globe, as you may know it. And they're another ship that's trying to stay afloat in this time. And part of that problem solving means that they have to make decisions together. So how do you think families during this time who haven't got governance structures in place should be looking at?
I hope that one thing that comes out of this is that more families will realize that they have to take this subject seriously and need to spend some time formalizing things. So now I want to break some of the things we've talked about into different components.
Okay.
So the three things of decision-making, communications, and problem-solving. Problem-solving is just a special case of decision-making to me. So really there's communications and then there's the other. So I think the first thing that families probably realized as things hit and people needed to make decisions is whether or not they were already accustomed to communicating about important things and knew how to communicate. Like, do we do this by phone? Do we get together face to face? Do we have a regular meeting on a certain day? All these things of communication, hopefully they've been formalized to a certain extent. And if they weren't before, maybe there's a better understanding and appreciation for what you get from doing it now and going forward. Now, when we get to the part about the decision-making and the problem-solving, that's a little bit trickier because it involves some agreement between the different parties of who gets to decide different things. I'm guessing that a lot of those questions have been raised over the last couple of months where there is some now clearly somebody decided something that somebody else probably thought they were getting to decide and things like this. So I don't expect that many families came through this and said, hey, wow, we had everything lined up perfectly and we didn't hit a speed bump. What I'm hoping is that this will serve as a wake-up call to many families to formalize a little bit more of their governance. Now, there's one more thing I want to get to right away is that written down and unwritten and formalized and not formalized aren't necessarily like equivalence. Like, you can have it written down, it doesn't mean it's formalized. Mm-hmm. And just in the same way, you can have it not written down, but still have it quite formal. Mm-hmm. And I think it's more important to have it formal, or actually more important than whether it's formalized, is if it's generally understood and agreed to. Mm-hmm. If everyone understands and everyone agrees to it, why waste your time writing it down? Mm-hmm. Almost. I mean, in the short term, if everyone agrees who does what and on what basis, then whether it's written or down or not is not that important. So I hesitate to get into the, oh, you got to make sure it's written down, because some people, there's a false sense of security saying, oh, well, we wrote it down. If mm-hmm. you write it down and nobody knows where it's written down, or nobody's read it and nobody agrees on it, there's mm-hmm. no point in having it written down. Yeah. So having the general consensus that everyone knows who does what and how you make decisions together based on what values, and when something out of the blue comes, are you able to sit together, look at each other, and come to a consensus rather quickly of what the right thing to do is based on what your family stands for and what's important to you? And can you come together to the public, to your employees, and demonstrate a consistent family stand on the decisions that you've made? Because that's another thing that I'm sure some families have been faced with, is this happened, they've reacted, and presumably some people, whether it's their clients, the community, or their employees, might have had, let's just say, less than a very favorable reaction to what happened and what the company decided. And how do they deal with that going forward?
Going on to just focusing on communication for a moment, like you said, yeah. even if it's not written down, the fact that there's understanding between everybody and everybody has a general understanding. I'm just thinking about the conversation we had with Nike just before we went live. And mm-hmm. I was mentioning that culturally, across the continent, I think it's a consensus or general understanding that you, as a child, you don't really want to challenge your parent. And sometimes when you're in business and decisions have to be made, especially in times like this, and you give a suggestion and it's not they don't pay attention to it. It becomes a matter of hierarchy. I'm the parent, you're the child. How do you resolve that? And how do you work on governance in to resolve governance in such situations? Because I feel that transition, that ability to communicate, is what blocks a lot of family businesses from moving from one generation to another.
Yes, absolutely. There is no easy answer to any of this. I'm starting to feel like I'm going to be repeating a lot of the things we talked about on Sunday between Nike and I about, you know, having the rising generation's voice be heard. Hmm. And while a situation like we're going through now provides opportunities for voices to be heard, it also arrives in a heightened sense of anxiety, which sometimes precludes the leading generation from wanting to listen to anybody's input besides their own. So the parents get into crisis mode and they are focused on making their decision based on their experience, which most people will naturally do. So I don't expect that a lot of rising generation people were able to have their voices heard in the immediate, you know, perturbations of what happened with everything being turned upside down. What my hope is that some of these voices, now that the first wave has washed up and knocked things around, that in the picking up the pieces, where do we go from here, what's next, I'm hoping that some of them will have more of a chance to have their ideas heard and listened to, so that they can be slowly but surely become someone who has a voice in where the family goes from here. Because that's where, I mean, I think if we just look at it on a fast forward through it, mm-hmm. everything is normal. Here comes the crisis. Everyone reacts. There's kind of a panic. the parents take control, if they ever even started to give it away, they certainly grab control, mm-hmm. and they right the ship and make sure that it doesn't sink. Mm-hmm. Great. Now what? I like to think that going forward, the solutions and what comes out of this and the opportunities that are created by all this, that the younger people in the family are in a better position to see the long term of what's possible for them and their cohorts and the people younger than them as to where this family can go and things, ways that this family business can take advantage of the new realities. I really think the younger people have a lot more to offer. Now, getting their voice heard, there's no quick answer to it. Mm-hmm. Slowly but surely, persistence and patience, as I said on Sunday.
So looking at that, I'm just thinking of a lot of conversations we've had throughout this conference, and we've had some speakers who've said or mentioned the issue of companies going back to their reason for being. For example, one of the examples was given was airplanes, the aviation companies, who have all this time we've, in our minds, we've seen them as people who ferry people from one place to another, a form of transport that ferries people from one place to another. But a lot of them have now pivoted during this time and have become focused on their cargo business. But it is still, the focus is still on the one thing that the company was established to do, which is transportation, as we know it. And so looking at that and then referring it to governance, I know when I work with families, I always urge families to look at their values and their mission. What is the reason why they started the business? Why is it important? Because I feel that those things are the foundation of family businesses. It reminds the family why they have this business and why it's important to them and why it is established. So my question would be, as we look at the current situation, but past it, how important is it for families to go back to looking at governance issues, such as really digging deep into looking at family visions, family missions, and family values in relation to the business itself and the future?
I love the question because it brings together a lot of different things, many of which you just mentioned in your preamble and in your question, but even just having the family understand the history and be able to ask the question. So if the parents or the grandparents are able to share with the younger people how the business started, why it started, what were the stumbling blocks that they went through, what were the obstacles and the challenges that the older generation or generations had in getting the business going. All these are important lessons that unfortunately sometimes don't get lost, because you know, the parents will start slow and then build up the business and have success, and they want to prove how strong and smart they are. And they don't want to talk about that time where they almost went bankrupt that the kids don't remember because they were still in diapers or in primary school. Mm-hmm. And so the parents have this, you know, desire to show this tough, strong veneer. Mm-hmm. But really, they might serve themselves better once the children are old enough to hear and understand and learn from the story, including the important things that went into the decisions of why in this business and what were the values that they were trying to answer to and spread with the creation of the business. So if you can get all the generations to understand where things started and why, and then build that through, then you can look at the current situation and say, geez, things are really kind of changed now, but how can we use the strengths and our history and maybe our brand and our reputation in the community based on how we started and we used to do this? How can we take that and help move forward so that the younger generation can take this and do the pivot or whatever they need to do that's still based on the same foundation, but to build it for whatever is next. And nobody knows what's next, but some of the many companies are already, you know, the alcohol companies are making hand sanitizer, and the companies that are making clothes are now making masks. There's people have already been doing this. And I think that those family businesses that are taking advantage of this are going to be, one, they'll be already ahead of the game in pivoting, but two, I think their reputation, if they are doing the right thing for the right reasons during this pandemic to help be part of the solution, I think they will be remembered and rewarded for that by the marketplace, that people like to deal with family businesses in general because they trust them. If they have more evidence that they can really trust this company and want to reward it because it was doing the right thing during a terrible time, I think that just gets augmented even more.
Just listening to you, I'm also thinking about just my experiences with governance, especially when I'm working with family businesses in Africa. It's a lot of trying to formalize structures and create solid foundations through looking at the basics, vision, missions, values, and how we want to deal with things, decision-making, problem-solving going forward. But from your experience, what soft skills are part of governance that are overlooked?
Wow. Okay. Soft skills, the basic underpinning of, to me, for all the soft skills is emotional maturity. Mm-hmm. And being able to be humble and admit that you're wrong and not feel like forcing your way through things is the only way, even though you've been doing it for a long time. And I know that people who are already starting to get gray hair, for example, without putting an age on it, sometimes have been operating under a certain way of being that's very aggressive and authoritarian for a long time. The good news is it doesn't always last forever. So I have seen people reach a certain age where they do soften. And hopefully it's combined with or caused by some sort of realizations about the importance of emotional maturity. And hopefully it coincides with, and there might be some cause and effect of realizing that their children are now old enough and mature and capable and have something to offer, so that there becomes more of a adult to adult relationship and not a one up, one down. It's hard to get through that one up, one down part. It could take years or decades for sure, but that doesn't mean it isn't worth trying to do it. And I know it's very frustrating sometimes for the children to be always seeming to be pushing, butting their heads against resistance. Some people have more of a tolerance and persistence that will work through it. Others will give up. Mm-hmm. Others will look and say, my parents will never change. I'm tired of banging my head. And maybe the best thing for them is to seek other places or accept that it's always going to be like this. But the ability to communicate, it really boils down to being able to communicate adult to adult. Not everyone is open to it. For some people, it takes a long time. One of the things that I know that some of the leading generation are hesitant to involve the younger people is that sometimes they imagine that everything automatically has to go to a democracy. So if I'm there with four kids and I say, why would I want them? They're going to outvote me 4-1. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a democracy. We don't have to give everyone a vote, but we do, I think we should, look to give everyone a voice. And so this thing about having a voice and having a vote is very important, especially early on, where you are trying to get the leading generation to understand that it's possible to hear what the other people have to say and hear their ideas, even if they are not automatically entitled because they all think it's a better idea. You can work through things that it's their idea first, and then hopefully they can demonstrate why the idea is a good one, to get through the resistance of the person who doesn't want to accept it. But all these things take time, and it goes through a lot of the steps that I talked about with Nikkei on Sunday, of having the people not just throw out the idea and say, I think this is a good idea, but to demonstrate that they have thought it through, that they have worked on some of the preliminary steps, that they have stumbled along the way and corrected it, and that they validated their idea with other people, to come not with, I think we should do this, but to come with more of a, you know, fully cooked plan of something. I think in general, it would have a better chance of being accepted than people, you know, throwing in their ideas of why don't we do this, why don't we do that? Well, if my child came to me and said, why don't we do this, why don't we do that? I mean, I would be inclined to say, well, give me some reasons why that makes sense. Tell me what research you've done. Tell me why you think, you know, who else thinks this is a good idea? Show me some other reasons besides it's your idea. And the likelihood of me accepting it goes up remarkably if the answers to my questions are good.
What happens in a situation where you have a family business, but you don't have mixed gens, where a family business is set up and you have the founders and they don't have offspring and they start looking at passing it on to employees? What does governance look like for that family business?
I think it's simpler in a lot of ways because the relationships with the people to whom you're intending to pass it are less, hopefully less caught up in emotional baggage or a desire or a feeling of a necessity to be equal with all of them. I think the key is to identify a small number of key people, possibly, maybe one, depending on the size of the business, but I would assume that maybe a three-legged stool would probably be an ideal situation where you're passing it down to a small group of people. And then the governance is more, so if we look at the three circles of the business, the ownership, and the family, in that situation, you take away the family circle, and so all of the governance goes around the questions about operating the business and then the transition of the ownership. So it's much simpler. Doesn't necessarily mean it's easy to do. And I know that in a situation like that, the founders will often treat the employees kind of like family. So there's, I'm sure there's still some emotional parts to it, but it's a lot less difficult than someone passing it on to three kids where one of them works in the business, one of them is kind of estranged, and another one is just likes to sit back and ask for a check once in a while, right? So there could be a lot more baggage on the family side than doing it in. You eliminate the family circle, you eliminate a lot of the complexity.
True. I'm just looking at some of the questions that have come through. There's a question from Temi Tope. And the question is, for family businesses currently going through this tough season, how do you suggest founders talk about the crisis with the next gen?
Openly and honestly, and in a way that you display your confidence that you'll get through it, but not try to falsely make everything seem wonderful. I think that this is a time where families should be sharing the burden and the fears and the possibilities together. And so if you look at on one end, the person freaking out and saying, oh my God, we're not going to survive. No, you don't want that. But you also don't want everything is going to be fine. I've got everything under control, unless that's really true. So I think the opportunity, so we talked about, you know, getting together and what are the soft skills. The soft skill there is to create a safe space. And one of the best ways to get people to feel safe about revealing their fears and their challenges is for you to reveal your own. And so leaders go first. So if the parents can come and say, you know, we've really been hit by this, it's really scary, we're pretty sure we're going to get through it, but, you know, it's going to be a rocky road, let's try to help each other through it, I think that would be a wonderful opening for the younger generation to say, okay, look, we hear you and we want to support and we have ideas and we'll be here and we want to be part of the solution. I think so many things of this crisis are actually opportunities long term. Mm-hmm. And if a founder or a leading generation person has not already been sort of more humble and open with their family, maybe this is just the chance or the catalyst to open up those kinds of discussions and a real, hey, we got to come together and face this and work our way through it together. I think it's a wonderful opportunity for that. And the other examples I gave of, you know, tearing your hair out and saying, oh my God, it's the end of the world, or don't worry, everything is fine, while, you know, they see the shark circling around. I mean, just, it's a chance for the family to come together. And it is actually, the onus is on the leaders of the family to be open, transparent, and honest, and you know, show a true picture of what they are facing and have an honest, heartfelt asking of the younger ones for their patience and help and ideas to get through it.
Yes, I completely agree that, and it leads us into the next question, which is, Tsitsi, do you think our unwillingness to talk about emotions in Africa, do you think it gives us an edge because we are tougher and more resilient? Wow. I actually believe that strength is in vulnerability. When we allow ourselves to be vulnerable in front of other people, we show true strength, because as human beings, we react to vulnerability more than we react to being toughened up and being told to suck it up. You find, even when you see viral campaigns that go viral online, it's always the emotive vulnerability that makes people react more than the hardcore. I think the motivation that then people say we can do it comes from seeing that we are vulnerable, seeing that we also get cut and bleed. So I believe that it would make more sense, or it would be something I would like to see going into the future, where more and more of us as Africans become vulnerable. And hopefully my generation is able to show our children a different way of being, a different way of being okay with making mistakes. I'm not saying make a mistake with everything you do, but when you do make a mistake, it's an opportunity to right it, it's an opportunity to learn. And so being able to say, I've made a mistake, being able to show your emotions be vulnerable goes a long way. I know growing up, I never really heard my parents telling me they love me. And in African culture, if they provide food and shelter, you know they love you. Like, you know they love you. And if you try to ask them, do you love me? They'll look at you like, have you lost your mind? Are you not full? Are you not dressed? So why are you asking me this? But I have made a conscious effort, especially with my children, to tell them that they're important, to be vulnerable, so that they know that I am also human. And the vulnerabilities of being human is that we sometimes make mistakes. We sometimes don't get it right all the time. I'm not sure your thoughts, Steve.
I love your answer, and it makes me think about the fact that, and especially the way you explained it, these tendencies change from one generation to the next. Mm-hmm. My grandfather and the way he treated my father are not the same as the way my father treated me. They were very similar, but my father was a little bit softer than his father was with him. And likewise, I am softer with my kids, and hopefully, and so I would, and a lot of these things come from the culture that they come from. Mm-hmm. And in different cultures, in different geographies, people are further along or not as far along on those generational transitions to soccer. I think that anyone who thinks that because they had a tough parent, they will be tough and it makes them stronger, if that works for you, okay, go for it, but you might be fooling yourself. And I agree that the old-fashioned style of leadership was that tough and strong and I am always right and you must listen to me and dictate has been fading over the last number of decades. I think it will continue to fade. I think different places in the world, they're further along or not as far along that curve. I agree with you that I think the future is more in people who can be vulnerable. If the strength that you learned from your parents treating you with the iron fist, if that helps you, let it help you, but try to make the adjustment when it comes to your generation, at least in the direction that I've been talking about. I really think that old style commanding leadership is fading away and does not have as good a future as it had a past.
Agreed, very much agreed. Anonymous is asking, I've come across many family businesses that don't have strong vision or mission in generation one beyond feed the family. In such instances, is the onus on the next generation to define the purpose?
The short answer is yes. Yes. And it's not only an onus, it's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I often talk about this, that, you know, the founding generation, they were just trying to put food on the table. And some of them were really good at it and ended up building a big business and some wealth. And it's not like they said, I want to be wealthy. And now, hey, I've arrived, I'm wealthy. They actually often overshoot what they were expecting. And then they end up with a whole bunch of other problems that aren't really problems, but that they didn't expect to be managing such a big enterprise or such a big asset base. And now they're faced with, oh my God, what, I've created a monster here. I was just trying to put food on the table, but I was really good and I was really lucky and I was in the right place at the right time. And all of a sudden, I have this wealthy family that I'm supposed to guide into the future. And it can feel very lonely for those people. And so I think to have their offspring interested and wanting to participate and engaged in where the family goes, I think it's an awesome opportunity for those younger people to get together and hopefully find engagement in more than one person if there are siblings. And then to ask the questions in a respectful way about where they are all going together. When I say respectful, I know people are often hesitant to talk to their parents, to talk about the assets, to talk about the business, because they don't want to feel like they're greedy and saying, give me my share, give me my share. That's what, and some parents are wary of that, and some of them rightly so. So you need to go at it in a way where you're being clear that you don't want to stick your finger, your hand into the piggy bank. You just want to talk about, well, okay, you've built this great thing. What's the purpose of it? Where do we want to go? How can we have this family enterprise serve all of us into the next generation for us and for the grandchildren going forward? Can we be part of setting out that where we're going together, what we can do together, what can we accomplish together? Why would we stay in business together? Are there things that we can all do together that would be greater than if we, sorry to say it, but waited for mom and dad to die and then divvied up the proceeds after, right? Because that's often the alternative. If there is no planning, if there is no long-range goal of keeping things together, then the default is, after the last parental funeral, everyone takes whatever's left and goes their own way, and good luck, and maybe some will succeed and maybe some won't. So the opportunity is there. The idea that the parents are going to say, oh yes, come on in, let's all talk about this, it's probably not very likely that they'll do that on the first time. But as the younger generation can do a bit of the work, do a little bit of the research, start to present some of their ideas, start to get together with their siblings and be more of a united front, they will have more success, hopefully, in getting the parents to be engaged in those discussions, which are so important to the long-term success. But they may not be ready for them yet. But yes, the onus is on the younger ones, and the opportunity is for the younger ones. And maybe this current reality where things are shaken up opens some of those doors a little bit wider for the discussion to begin.
Now, I think my last question is a bit of a philosophical one, and based on world peace, as we may know it. Just thinking, you have the adage from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. And it has been reiterated across the globe in many languages, many cultures, in different ways. But it's just become a consensus that most family businesses will last three generations and very few will go past that. My question is that how can we, from the previous question you just had, and you were talking about that suspicion that the generations have from each other, where the parents are thinking the kids already want their share, and sometimes you do get the kids who are saying, can I get my share and get on with my life? How can we ever get to a situation, or which generation does it get to before we have a situation where the focus is not about money? Because when a business is started, there is focus on making money to sustain the family, but then there's very much focus on serving a community. That is what makes a family business become a family enterprise and become much bigger than that. It's serving community and providing a good or a service that's needed at that time, and being able to pivot and adjust as the need grows and as the community changes. But how do we take away the conversation from always being about how much I can make from it, whether it's when I take over the business, or when I start the business, or when I get my shares in the business? How can we make it the conversation more about serving community, serving family, about working together for a common good, as opposed to just the monetary figure? Because I feel that the world has become too focused on just how much is it worth. Let's put a dollar figure to everything.
There's a lot more to wealth than the financial wealth, but the financial wealth is what everyone sees and is easy to understand, because you can attach a number and a dollar figure to it. The families that get past the, let's call it the greed stage, presume most of them have gotten to the point where they basically have enough money that anything they've ever wanted to do, they could do. But now they are faced with that. They don't want to have spoiled kids, and they don't want the kids to be ruined by the money. What I think a lot of the families who have succeeded have in common is a couple of things. So one is the leadership from the parents to not only talk about the fact that money is not the most important thing, but live that way. So the parents who don't throw money away on things that are frivolous will have better luck in raising children that are reasonable in their spending. But the second thing that a lot of them have done is consciously gone into philanthropy and set up, whether it's a family foundation or some kind of a structure of involving the offspring and the next generations in the decisions of how to actually give some of this money away to the community or other causes. And the benefit from that is not only to teach the children the importance of, of sharing the wealth and being a good member of the community and saying, well, with this wealth, there are privileges, but there's also responsibilities to give back and to help. There's also the opportunity to have the family members work together on something where it's not about greed. In fact, it's the opposite of greed. It's about giving things away. And so when we talk about family governance, learning to work together, sometimes when there's a lot of wealth, the family is hesitant to involve the children in managing the business because it's such a big entity. And they're worried that if Junior comes in and makes a mistake, it's going to cost us millions of dollars. Well, you can put Junior on the committee that looks at the philanthropy, and the people can learn to work together, even at a very young age, with older people, and learn responsibility and learn financial literacy and learn some of the skills of working with a board or a committee. And they can do that all on the philanthropy side, which hopefully is also having to be grounded and not just looking to, you know, spend the money. And so it's a great training ground for individual people in the family, or even a committee. Maybe you put all the kids in charge on a committee to look at the philanthropy, and you watch and see who displays leadership in that group and who is able to have the emotional maturity to get consensus from everyone. There's a lot of skills that come out of managing a philanthropic effort, even if it isn't huge. Even if it's only a relatively small sum, you can put things in place with a small amount of money, and the education that the younger generation who are now managing that and the learning they get from doing that together, and the parents watching them do it and seeing who has the leadership, there's a lot to be benefit from that. And I think that most families that have gone more than three generations typically have some sort of philanthropical arm that they have used not only to increase their reputation among the community because people see what they're doing, but to also engage and train the younger generations for more important future roles, possibly in the business.
Thank you for that answer. It gives a lot of clarity even to myself as I go forward. There is a comment from Sudi, and it is, I like the idea of humility being a key driver to allow for room to engage each other as family. I am from Kenya, and a couple of family-owned businesses here have surely run into the risk of managing succession and having a smooth transition into the next two generations taking up responsibility. And many times the second generation have a sense of entitlement, I think, which is what we were discussing just now. Steve, thank you so much for joining me this evening. I think it's morning for you.
It's afternoon. It's afternoon for you. 1 p.m.
So. Okay. Thank you so much for joining me. I don't know if you have any parting shots, last words of advice that you may have before we sign off this session.
I really enjoyed being part of this. I'm especially when I saw some of your other guests that are very illustrious and well known, and congratulations on getting everyone to cooperate and do this. I think it's a wonderful resource for your community.
Thank you.
I hope that people will see what's happening now more as an opportunity than as a problem. And I hope that the younger generation does not get dissuaded from their parents telling them, no, not now. And that they develop the persistence and the confidence to keep going and elaborate their plans a little bit more and keep trying. And I wish everyone luck. And I know it's not easy. I've never say that this stuff is easy. I get that it's complicated. I grew up with this stuff, and being a next gen, I know what it is. It's not simple, but it can be wonderful. And hopefully everyone goes about things with the right attitude. And I wish everyone as much success as they can muster.
Right. Thank you so much for this. And if anyone wants to get hold of you and engage you going forward, how do they do that?
I'm relatively easy to find because I have a name that is not common, and yet it's not that hard to spell. So Steve Legler, L-E-G-L-E-R, if you Google that, if I don't show up first, there's something wrong. If you add, let's see, family business, I will should definitely show up first. My website is called shiftyourfamilybusiness.com, which was the title of my first book. And there's all kinds of blogs there that I've been writing for the last 6 or 7 years, one a week. So there's things on all sorts of subjects that if you want to find some relevant material, sometimes it's easier to send somebody a blog that they can read for a few minutes as fodder for a future discussion. Please go and self-serve, use whatever can be helpful. And if you want to get in touch, please, there's contact information on the website. I'll gladly set up a Zoom call with people just to chat about your situation and see if there's a way I can be a resource for you.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate it. And I look forward to engaging you in future as AFF and on a personal level as well.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here with you.
Stay safe.